Good evening, everyone. I'm Mike Sokol. I am not auditioning to be the judge for To Kill a Mockingbird. I'm actually, as your presiding officer, will preside over tonight's meeting of the Homedale Township Public Schools School Board. Let me bring this meeting to order by having a roll call, please. Mr. Petrizzo?
Ms. Flynn is absent. Mr. Sokol?
Here.
Mr. Reddy is absent. Mrs. Bramante?
Here.
Mr. Wall?
Here.
Mr. Foster?
Here.
Mr. Hammer, I know it will be here, currently absent. Mrs. Urbanski?
Here.
Mrs. Zhang?
Here.
If we could all rise for the flag salute.
Paul, why don't you lead it for us? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Paul. Statement is hereby made that adequate notice of this meeting was given by posting written notice prominently on the bulletin board in the office of the Board of Education, 65 McCampbell Road, Homedale, New Jersey, the district's website, and was sent to four district schools. The mailing and or hand delivery of said notice to the designated newspapers, Asbury Park Press, Independent, the PLG, the PSG, the PSA, the PTSO, SAB presidents, and student representatives to the board. Filing with the clerk of the Homedale Township Police Headquarters and Public Library. Eileen, could you read about the Open Public Meetings Act?
Sure. Meetings of the board are open to the public and all members of the community should feel free to participate. There are two opportunities for the public to speak. The first is at the beginning of the meeting for agenda items only, and the second is at the end of the meeting for other items. Any individual desiring to speak shall give his or her name, address, and the group, if any, that is represented. The presentation shall be as brief as possible, but no more than 3 minutes per individual. There are certain matters that may be brought before the board that cannot be immediately addressed in public. Such matters may be referred by the president to a board committee and or to the superintendent for consideration and or resolution. The board vests in its president or other presiding officer authority to determine the remarks of any individual if he or she deems it in the best interest of those present to do so.
Thank you very much, Eileen. We have one presentation this evening. It's the District State Proficiency 2018-19 and Link IT Data Report Presentation 2021 for ELA. And we have the esteemed Dr. Jeffrey Charney and Ms. Alicia Farisi here to do the presentations. So Jeff and Alicia, it's yours. Just a clever way to keep it short, Jeff. That's right.
Yeah, that would be better. So again, good evening, members of the board and the public. Tonight, what we're going to do is present to you the 2019 New Jersey SLA performances amongst our elementary, middle, and high school grades. There was no standardized testing last year, as you know, because of the pandemic. You have actually seen this before. We're presenting it quickly as an anchor, and we're following through with that on this last year using our own internal testing with our LinkIt platform. We'll conclude, we'll be doing two pieces, both ELA and math. Ms. Faris will handle the ELA and I'll talk about the math. Ms. Colleen is not with us tonight, she's on vacation. And we'll conclude with opportunities and next steps going forward.
Good evening, everyone. As Dr. Charney said, my name is Alicia Faris. I'm the Supervisor of Humanities and I will be assisting with this evening's presentation. We will begin by looking at data from our last NJSLA test, which was from the spring of 2019, and then go into recent benchmark assessments, which are based on NJSLA released test questions. In this first chart, you are looking at the ELA cohort view over a three-year time span. This allows us to follow the same students' progress over 3 years. The up and down trend seen in all grades could be partially attributed to slight variations in total grade level enrollment, as well as the randomization of actual test questions that appeared on each test. An example is the eighth grade seen here in green, which had a sizable increase in proficiency, and fourth grade in yellow, which statistically stayed the same. Homedale proficiency percentages are consistently and considerably above state percentages. This is a visual representation side by side of Homedale and the state percentages. In each section, Homedale is on the left and the state is on the right. I would like to highlight grades 9 and 10, where our spiralized standards-focused curricular approach is seeing great success. That would be the last two sections all the way to the right. The next set of graphs examine Homedale and comparative peer districts, both in district factor grouping I on the top, and at the board's request, additional peer districts below. Homedale is represented by the blue dot. The major trend that one can notice is that Homedale sits consistently above the state, as already noted, and within the middle range of the comparison districts. It is important to note variables such as total sample size of student population can have an effect on where a district falls on this graph. In this comparison chart, we have ranges from large districts such as West Windsor, which has student populations of high 600s per grade level, to very small, Colts Neck, which has student populations of about under 100 per grade level. Again, we see the success of the high school, which is in the upper tier in these charts. So this is the grade band for grades 3 through 5. And then again, we see grades 6 through 8. And then at the high school level for grades 9 and 10, you can see we are in the top tier. Here we see the results from 2019 in grade bands 3 through 5. The grade group band 3 through 5 is always interesting to look at since this is inherently a large jump in text complexity, vocabulary, and written expression from the previous early elementary grades. This, of course, coincides with the first standardized tests of this type that students will encounter in their educational careers. For example, NJSLA tests writing. However, this is something that MAP does not measure. You can see a rise in the percent proficient as the students go up in grade level. We are excited to see what the rollout of our new literacy program, Fontes and Pinnell Classroom, brings in the coming years. Grades 4 and 5 will continue with the benchmark balanced literacy program with a focus on phonics, vocabulary, and word work, in addition to the new supplemental resources for targeted skill-based instruction in the 21-22 school year. Moving on to the grade 6 through 8 grade band, the main highlight here is the consistent 80% or above proficiency. Again, we see that at the high school level, 80% proficiency levels, and we increase the number of exceeding students by the time that they reach 10th grade. Our goal is to reach 85% proficient in the next few years, and 90% beyond that, which we feel is achievable. So some next steps for Village School and Indian Hill. The main vision with next steps is to diagnose and target. We will continue to utilize MAP testing and interim benchmark assessments, such as running records, as a tool to inform and personalize instruction to fit students' individual needs for all students, both above grade level and below, and obviously in between as well. We will develop resourceful school data teams using the DataWise model, which Dr. Charney will touch upon later. We will hone in on identified focus areas, in this case, reading informational texts at Village and reading literary texts at Indian Hill. Reading vocabulary and written expression at both schools will be a priority. Again, we are excited for the launch of the new literacy program at Village and implementation of the new schedule at both Indian Hill and Village that will accommodate increased planning in the form of a second prep period for that purpose and supplemental instruction. Similarly, at the middle school and Holmdel High School, again, we wanna develop resourceful school data teams that are effective and ongoing. We wanna continue to provide professional development on data analysis and on our new supplemental resources, such as Common Lit and No Red Ink, to support our vision of diagnose and target. Both of these programs support engaging, comprehensive skill-building practice and offer in-depth analytics for teachers. Reading vocabulary and reading literary texts, as identified as the weakest strands on the NJSLA test at both SATs and the high school, will become a priority. Teachers will provide multiple opportunities for applications of these skills throughout the year. Common Lit is a perfect resource for these areas of focus, so we're excited to get that going. We will continue to use Linkit testing interim benchmark assessments as additional data points to differentiate and personalize instruction to fit all students' individual needs, eventually moving to student goal setting and increased ownership of their learning. We will now look at our 2021 benchmark assessments. When looking at Linkit benchmarks, anything above 50% is considered on grade level. The cutoff for meeting or exceeding changes with each benchmark as their proprietary algorithm calculates. As evidenced in this chart, each grade level saw significant growth or statistically stayed even from the time of their first benchmark to their last, which is exactly what we had hoped to see. Here we see a graph with the three main topics assessed on our Linkit benchmarks in English language arts. It is important to note that a decrease does not necessarily mean a regression, but can also mean that there were less literary text questions on benchmark C than on benchmark A. This is why it is important to have teachers drill into their individual class results. So for example, we could be looking at five questions on one topic on benchmark A, and then there could potentially be only one or two of the same topic on benchmark C. Again, we see a similar picture with eighth grade. As you can see here, vocabulary wasn't on benchmark A, but appeared on benchmark C, and our students did very well. For 10th grade, they did not have vocabulary as one of their topics, but we saw growth in both informational and literary text. And then grade 11 as well. Another factor to consider is, again, population size. The sample size did shrink from benchmark A to benchmark C. Benchmark C was given at the end of the year. Linkit benchmarks test a variety of major language arts skills as well. This is a snapshot of some of the most common skills that appear on the assessments. These skills are cognitively advanced, and we saw growth in almost all areas. So these are the most common ones that we see on these benchmarks: cause and effect, compare, contrast, inference, key ideas and details, main idea, vocabulary. This is a great example of how noticing an opportunity with inference, we were able to infuse targeted skills practice into lessons to achieve a huge jump by benchmark C. And this is grade 9's skill summary. And I just want to note about grades 9 through 12 with their skills. The skills tested on the LinkedIn benchmarks in grades 9 through 12 increase with each grade level and each subsequent benchmark assessment. Many of the skills are only measured on one benchmark, and that is why there is no comparison charts for grades 10 and 11. There are over 20 skills assessed in the upper grades, and skills increase with cognitive challenge on each benchmark as well. Skills also get more specific as the benchmarks go on. For example, instead of just measuring figurative language, the assessment will measure sarcasm or understatement or irony. And they get more specific like that. Here is a sampling of some of the skills that are assessed in grades 9 through 12 on the benchmarks. So again, this is where we see the power in our teachers and our instructional coaches drilling into the individual data sets to meet the needs of our students. It gets very, very specific, and we're able to gain so much important information about our kids and their learning. So at this time, I will hand it over to Dr. Jarney.
Before you take, before you get off the podium there, Alicia, I wanna see if other members of the board have any questions to ask you about that component of the presentation. Does anyone on the board have any questions?
I have a question.
Please, Elizabeth.
When you had the overall comparison of the Linkit tests, I noticed that grade 10 was at least 10 points lower than the other grades, 9 and 11 and 12. Do you know and understand what's going on in that situation? It's kind of at the beginning. It was like 49th percentile, and the other ones were closer to like 60th. And there was one that had all of the...
Mm-hmm. This one.
There it is.
This one.
Benchmark A, 61.
Can you talk a little bit about the 10th grade and what's going on there?
So as you can see that we took the benchmark A in about January. Normally that would be taken at the beginning of the school year. So we took a while to get started with our Linkit programming and getting the kids onboarded and all of the measures that go into making sure that we deploy the test correctly. So we took the test a little later in the year. I will say that it is 35 questions, multiple choice, and the students have about a class period to complete it. So a lot of this is just getting the students used to the practice and the way of taking this test. But I think in terms of the 10th grade, what we did was, again, looked at the specific skills, and then we went back and looked at our curriculum. And some of it is just that they didn't, you know, take nonfiction, for example. They may not have nonfiction until more towards the end of the year. So that's something that we look at and then go back, and we are spiraling our curriculum so that every single unit now includes examples and samples of every type of genre. So we'll do a poetry with a nonfiction, with a fiction in every unit. That way we know we're hitting all of our targets regardless of what time of year the testing takes place.
But using that argument, why is the 10th grade so much lower than the 9th and the 11th?
To be honest, we always
markedly
see
different.
Yeah, we always see and even with the NJSLA data, some outliers in terms of all entire grade levels. I think it could just be a factor of the curriculum and the students themselves looking at their individual, how many students were present in class, you know, and during the pandemic year. So there were a lot of factors that did affect the testing.
Okay, and I have one other question. You were talking about in eighth grade where you saw inference as one of the areas and there was a huge improvement. Can you give us an example of what was done in order to create that gain?
So what we really want to infuse more is that skills-based practice. So in a lot of pedagogy, you'll hear the I do, we do, you do model. And we're bringing that up to the high school and the middle school. So the teachers were honed in on inference as an area of weakness and made sure that they did mini lessons on strategies to decipher inference. And then there was lots of application and practice activities that went along with that. So that's that. That's the time where we would take our mentor text, which could be a class novel, and use that to practice inference, but at the same time also give the students short stories, poetry, other ways of practicing inference as well with the strategies that the teachers teach them.
Thank you.
So Alicia, at the end of the day, your conclusion in 25 words or less?
I'm very impressed with the data and the information that we receive, both grade level wise patterns, as well as our individual students. I think that we now have at our hands information to help our students who are above grade level to achieve their best, as well as students who are on grade level, below grade level. And I think that's the real beauty of Linkit. We can always get better at everything that we do. You know, I'm a Mets fan, so I'll take a Pete Alonso analogy. He won the home run derby again, but he set his goal to get even more home runs than he did before. Linkit kind of gives us that power to do with our students, and the information that it gives us at our fingertips is something that we've never had before. So already we're seeing growth and success.
But to sum it up, you mm-hmm. feel you've, I don't want to go into all the nitty gritty, mm-hmm. but you say you've identified those factors that can trigger growth within our students in the period that we're talking about, nine through 12.
Yes, both okay. our individual and on grade level patterns.
Okay, before you leave that podium, is there anyone else who has a question? I hear Joe's voice.
Yeah, if you don't mind, Mike, just go ahead, a couple Joe. Questions. For the, you mentioned that 50% means they're on grade level. Is that the same as the information that gets sent home to the parents? Like I remember receiving stuff for my children that, you know, had individuals and, you know, is if I look at it and, you know, get a math or an English assessment or, you know, if it had an overall assessment in there, should I look upon that as the same way that if they're doing 50% or better, they're on grade level? Because there was some concern that I had from an individual, and I want to make sure that we're giving good information to the parents to be able to interpret the information that they get when they get it at home, and what do they do with that, and then how can they either help their kids or work with the teachers in order to help their kids.
Different from MAP testing, which I know a lot of our parents are used to receiving those MAP reports, Linkit doesn't do percentiles, it does percentages. And it also does the similar color coding that MAP testing did as well. So you'll see they'll color code the dark green, the green, they have what's called the bubble, which Linkit has assured us 2/3 of students who even fall in the bubble will go on to pass NJSLA. So Dr. Attorney, you can probably speak more to their algorithm as well of how they factor it in.
So I will say that the emphasis with Linkit is really on student growth. So when we send a report to parents, and we just did complete a report sent through grade 7 through 12, it does show percent. It is color coded, as Alicia said, in green, light green, red. Red is a topic or a skill that needs attention, and green is dark green is exceeding expectations, light green is meeting expectations. But I think the take-home message for parents and students is we're more interested in their growth. It's not like New Jersey SLA, which is a high-stakes one-time test. It often happens at the wrong time of year, so that we have to wait the entire year to get the results. And by then it's often too late. With Linkit, it's an ongoing monitoring of student progress. And that's the message we want parents to receive. So as Alicia showed you, the breakdown of skills and subtopics, what we're finding is it may be 2 to 3 skills that a student needs to work on, maybe inference, academic vocabulary. And what's most significant is what parents look at for the next report. If they see a 10% pop in academic vocabulary, that's impressive. By benchmark C, which is often in late spring, if they see a 20% pop from the fall administration, that says that the student is making very good progress on that skill. So our aim is entirely different from standardized tests, is to measure growth. And And when growth doesn't happen in an accelerated fashion, we need to look at how we can help that student achieve the trajectory that's necessary. So Linkit, as Alicia said, provides this district, I think for the first time, opportunities to improve at this point in the secondary environment, the skill sets and the subtopics critical to literacy. And you'll see that pattern in math as well. Different emphasis.
Thank you, Jeff. Do we have any other questions for Alicia on her presentation?
Yes, I have a question. That's all good information. If the parents want to copy of these slides, where can they get it?
We will be posting this.
There will be we'll be opening up a parent portal that will give much more comprehensive information. That will be available in the fall. You know, my vision, and you've heard me say this once or twice, is to have a digital footprint of your child's growth in, let's say, the science standards, K through 12, or their math proficiency from when they were a kindergartner to when they're in multivariable calculus. Some of these, believe it or not, some of these things like number sense are coherent throughout the grades. There's reports on that topic throughout. I think that for Homedale, the vision can be, this is what you're gonna send to a college, growth in standards improvement for science, growth in literacy improvement, and for example, inference. That's a whole different world. And I think the district is ahead of the curve in trying to utilize that information. And colleges haven't figured it out yet, but I think we're well on our way to helping them figure out what's important in a K-12 education.
I think that's a great idea. So do you mean that provide a personalized growth reports for each student from kindergarten to their high school 12th grade? Thank you.
The emphasis is on growth. It's not New Jersey SLA, which is basically achievement. And that's not as important as really individual growth. So each student has expectations, they have targets. We want to help them realize and actualize those targets. And this is a platform that will help them do that.
Eileen?
Yeah, so I don't actually have a question. I just had a comment about the report. So you mentioned how they were color-coded. So one warning out there for parents who got it is some of the categories only had three questions. So if a student got one of three questions wrong, they're gonna, the flag's going up as red. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's alarming. It just happened that were only three of those questions. So
actually, it should be, if it's just one, it should be in the light green zone, but that's a good point. You can't, we don't want parents to raise an alarm because their student did not do well on one question out of three. It's really what we'll see at least three benchmarks across the year, but the ultimate goal with Linkit is common assessments where you'll have multiple tests, maybe 10, 12. And instead of giving, for example, the test that the subject area would be, we would match those standards to that test and give it through Linkit so that we have validated questions that have been sampled throughout the nation, have construct validity, criterion reference validity, and actually it's quite seamless for teachers to use. There's a library that comes with the platform. They can pick and choose the questions. These questions come from New York State Regents, New Jersey, New York Achieve, the California State Assessments. So they'll be able to construct tests that really are very valid and give a lot of information.
So they're not getting extra tests. These are going to be tests that be the normal tests. Is that what you're saying?
Same amount of tests. Teachers will design in their professional learning communities tests across the subject areas such as biology or calculus, and those will be given in my vision in replacement of their normal tests that cover the same material. So it's not, shouldn't be more testing, it should be valid replacement testing.
And mirroring these types of questions that the students are saying. So one of the things that we've already begun doing is when we notice that there's a question that many students got incorrect, we again will take a very close look as a team. The teachers look at those questions, you know, why did so many students get this question wrong? We evaluate that, and then we're able to, on another assessment, give them similar type questions so that the students get used to and comfortable seeing those questions, and they also work them through how to solve those types of questions. So there's certain words, even in language arts, that throw students off, even at the high school level. Our honors kids, if they see most or least, a lot of times, you know, they'll kind of freeze up on those questions because the test is going to throw at you two very similar answers. And that's kind of one of the things that we help our students to work through, and Linkit gives us that ability.
Thank you, Alicia. So now we're going to move to the second presentation by Dr. Charney on district state proficiency.
So I'm going to do the mathematics for you. It's a similar presentation. I've outlined a cohort of you, so fourth grade, for example, 2017, our students were roughly 65% proficiency. The above were magic yellows.
Okay. If you follow the yellows, they stayed relatively stable by the time they got to the sixth grade. Whenever you see data like this, you look for what's of interest. So I would point out, if you look at the fifth grade, just going across from 2017 to 19, we had a sizable pop there. It went from 60 to 80%. So whenever you see those kinds of movements, it's not the same cohort, but something might have been responsible for a 20% drop. Some of you may know that 2019 represented the first year in fifth grade that we had double math. So we did double math for fourth and fifth grade. We also did a heterogeneous class mixture for fifth grade. So that move, the data suggests very powerfully that might have been the right move because our students achieved quite a bit. This again is a proficiency comparison with New Jersey SLA. The smaller bars are the state. We're not as interested in that because we're really sizably ahead of the state, but we're looking at our trends. So you can see toward the right in algebra, we made good trends going upward. Also in grade five, there again, our trend, as I pointed out, was an upward trend substantially by 20%. And again, we think that was due to our heterogeneous grouping as well as our double math, first double math. You're more interested in a DFG comparison. So on the top chart, you look for the blue dot. So for grade three, we're in the low, just barely the lower half. Grade four, we're in the middle of the pack for DFGs. In grade five, there it is, we're number one for those DFGs. And again, it's suggesting that the move we made in fifth grade, the doubling of the math period, as well as heterogeneous work, may have contributed to that significantly. The lower charts are different districts that the board wanted us to compare to. And we're pretty much in the middle of the pack, except on the right, grade five. Again, you see, even with a different cohort of DFG school districts, we're still up there. In fact, we're third in the pack. So that data is pretty powerful. 6 to 8, again, follow the magic blue dot. It's for our 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, we're in the lower third tier. And similarly, compared with those other DFGs in the second row, we're toward the lower third of those school districts. In our 7-10 math, it's a bit tricky because, as you know, many of our students, in fact, most of our students, take algebra in junior high school or geometry. Our 8th grade math only has about 35, 38 students. Roughly 70% of our students take algebra or some advanced class. They're not part of this data because when the state tests, it only tests, for example, 9th grade high school algebra. So our scores are going to be less in 7th, 8th grade because it's more of a general test, our general math classes. But you can see for algebra, we're in the middle of the pack, largely, of those DFGs, and similarly on the second row with those DFGs. Here's the math performance proficiency. Green is good, both light green and darker green. We're about 80% with our grade 3. That's a good stand. Grade 4 as well. Grade 5 across the board, we're achieving 80% of our students are meeting or exceeding expectations. If you look at 6 through 8, we have more work to do here. Our 6th grade is about 65% meeting or exceeding expectations. Look what happens in grade 7. So about 12% of our students take an advanced course in grade 7, 88% stay in a general math course. So when you, on the left is our 88% of the students at general math. When we add the algebra students in 7th grade, you see that it pops up by about 5 to 7%. The pattern is more pronounced in 8th grade. As I told you, more students take advanced math than don't, and it's sizable. 70% of our students take some form of advanced math, be it Algebra 1, Algebra Honors, or Geometry. So when you look at all our 8th grade students, there's a good 72-73% proficiency. When you just look at the 8th grade, the sample size is about 35-38 students. They don't do as well. 25% achieve proficiency. We probably need to do more work in that area. For 9-12, again, the anomaly of many of these students in our Algebra 1, they've looked at algebra for the first time in 9th grade. Most of our students, however, have experienced it in junior high. So you're getting a lower proficiency. 50% proficiency is not a good number. We need to work on that. But remember, those are our general students. Most of our students take algebra in middle school. Geometry also, many of our students are 2 years ahead in math. This just reflects the high school. So those are students taking geometry for the first time in 10th grade. Their proficiency is not as high. By the time you get to Algebra 2, where advanced students don't experience Algebra 2 in SATs, they start moving the curve higher. So when you include all the pool of Algebra 2, we reach a 75% proficiency. And if I just look at grade 9 through all math, regardless of whether you're in geometry, if you take it in 9th grade, or algebra, which is standard, that includes 95% of our students. So our proficiency is somewhat near 70%. 2019 again scores that show district wide. This is what I was talking about. If you take all the students, seventh, eighth, ninth grade students at one time taken algebra, we're about 75% proficient. And again, that reflects the take-home message is this district, honestly, in all the districts I've been, more students take advanced math than not. It's generally at best a 50-50 shot. We have 70% upwards of our student taking math before their chronological age. So 60%, if we factor in all of geometry students, we achieve 60% proficiency. And again, Algebra 2 is when you level the field. Everybody's in high school when they take Algebra 2 for the test, and that's about a 75%. In 2019, no 11th graders were tested. This all reflects 9th and 10th grade. So as Alicia pointed out, the opportunities and next steps, we really need to use our PD opportunities to look at standards. We need to develop specific goals for students. I did share a story with the CNI committee that when we started to do this with our special ed students at Village, we were able to look at a cohort of 17 students, and within 4 to 5 weeks, we graduated two of those students back into the general classroom because it was a focused, goal-oriented, data-rich approach. And we graduated a number of others through this effort when we first started to look at what we can do to help students target skills and set goals individually. And that's the whole point of a testing program. Going forward, we're excited about the Ready Math program in grades 4 through 6. Lee and I actually implemented this at Franklin, and it was responsible largely for bringing two schools out of state focus. And those two schools are now high performing schools. So this is a very good program. It's again, targeted goals. It sets individual expectations for students, and the teacher goes over these student goals regularly. It's not about, again, a grade, it's about growth. In our SATS middle school, we're going to have to continue data-driven professional development, establish our data teams. We sent a team of administrators to DataWise Harvard Educational Leadership this summer. It was an intense 2-week journey on how to better implement data so that teachers wrestle with it and they come up with viable and very reasonable goals for their students. Similarly, we have to do the same with Homedel. We've had most departments are engaged in Linkit. Not all have developed the 3 benchmarks, but our goal is by the end of next year that they will administer these benchmarks across all subject areas, except perhaps the arts and language, for which there's not a lot out there in terms of Linkit. And so I'm going to just go forward to math performance this year. If you look at the chart, we've made really good growth from benchmark B to C. Across the board, there was improvement. Again, we need more work in high school algebra. Those are ninth graders that take algebra for the first time. Part of that work now is our summer step up that is recruiting students to be prepared for algebra going forward. We've identified those students. We've invited them to attend the program. We also have an algebra lab, which will focus on helping them with their skills. Here you just see subtop, similar to what Alicia presented to you. So three areas, subtopics, we've shown good growth in from B to C for seventh grade. Here's a skill set where we've shown growth across the, those skill sets. And as long as the trend is up, it's good. When you look at areas that perhaps didn't grow as much, that's what you charge teachers with focusing on. Eighth grade, similar, very good growth. The geometry piece is probably an anomaly. We don't teach geometry skills till the end of eighth grade, so it would make sense their knowledge of it at the beginning of the year is not as robust as at the end of the year. Here again, very good growth from B to C. Teachers will look at areas of weakness. You know, you give a pat on the back to your students that have grown through threefold, fourfold in their skill set. You work and spiral on areas that where you haven't got as good a growth set. Here's our, again, algebra anomaly. These are purely for our SATs algebra. These are our top kids. So I point out the first set of data. So polynomials and rational expressions needs work. You'll see that in other data. So that's across the board, whether it's ninth or 10th grade, there it is again. So polynomials, dividing and operations with them. So that would be something to the extreme left that's, that teachers would work on with their students. Here's high school algebra one, those ninth graders. We have work to do with them. This is the first time they've experienced algebra. Those scores are lower, and we will have to concentrate on those particular subtopics, as well as these skills. You see more imbalance in terms of their skill set compared to our high flyers in math. Geometry, good progress. Skills, very good progress in geometry, uptrends. Algebra 2, which is all taken at the high school, that was my point. We probably need to do some work and some skills there. Inferences and conclusions our students don't do as well on, for example. Another skill set for algebra 2, which we need to focus. The good thing about the Linkit is it's not a large battle. You focus on a few skills, and this is what the data indicates. You spiral that throughout the year, and then you can do good work. So our conclusion here is that we want to establish robust data teams in all schools. We want our data sessions led by administrators, particularly principals. Our interventionists and coaches will help that process. We would like to incorporate, and we've done this to a large extent, the accountability in teachers through their SGO and PDPs. So it might be a reasonable goal that 80% of the students in the class will achieve a particular set of skills in algebra, for example. And in order to support that, we have to do training for teachers, administrators, and actually the board as well. And that's my presentation. Any questions?
I have, it's not so much a question. I guess it is a question. So every year we get this presentation and we see the low scores in Algebra 1, and where it explains that, you know, these are the students who had taken in high school. So if we're going to use these Linkit assessments now, can we finally be able to see some growth in for those children who are, in my opinion, kind of, oh, they'll take it later, it's harder for them. But I think every child has a possibility of learning and advancing. And it's so using this program, are we going to be able to really target those kids mm-hmm. and help them raise their scores?
In the way I've presented it to you is that we need to do work in Algebra 1. We can't waylay that by any means. our algebra one teachers will need to focus on skill sets. They will have to, again, I return to the theme of its individual growth. So for each kid, it's going to be a victory. They're no longer going to just rely on passing the course with a C or C minus or D. It's really going to be growth in skill sets. So that's going to be, you know, the message. And Linkit will reinforce that message so that we have considerable growth for each student.
Do you have any other questions for Dr. Charnock?
Also, I have another, yes. Just a quick question. I have a child in high school, and I got a Linkit ELA, but I never got a Linkit NAP. Did they not go out?
They did. Can anyone tell me if they did not get the math report?
Eileen didn't get it. Did you get a Linkit math?
I did.
You did?
I got it. So, okay.
So
it might be it might be in your did you do Gmail? It might be
it came out
like in a similar flow. No, it came out in a similar flow in that.
So please email me if you don't find it, because we'll send that out.
I have a question.
Linda, you had a question.
Yeah. So those data include the special ed students?
Yes.
Okay. Another question, can we go to the first slide?
First slide.
Yeah. So from the, for the sixth grade six, I don't understand the trend from 2017 to 2019.
Right. So we would need to look at that very carefully, because it was a sizable drop. So that's a good point. We need to look at it. I'm not aware of any programmatic changes in grade six, but we will be implementing a new pilot, again, Ready Math. And my expectation is you'll see improvement in those scores.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the reports and for all the statistics of the data. So we make clear what were our school district's performance and in very detailed information perspectives. So we will know which area we need to approve. We can just think we are great school district. We are doing so great for the past 10 years. I think the data can speak better than you just assume where we stand for. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda. Just one real quick question, Jeff. So you're saying that your results do show growth even when the students are seniors?
Could you repeat that?
I said, you're still seeing growth even when some of these students are seniors.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Again, I can't emphasize enough. It's about growth. It's not about standing still. So they can still get A's. I'm not interested in that so much. I may rattle some feathers saying this, but I'm much more interested in individual growth. Because our students, frankly, are math, I'll just say it, they're math nerds. They like math, they do well at math, they test well in math. We need to help them with that. We need to really realize their full potential in mathematical reasoning. We have the course offerings, but we need to individualize, or get them on board to individualize their growth targets. And that's what Linkit helps us do.
Thank you, Jeff. If there aren't any more questions, we'll move on. We do not have student representatives because it is the summer, so we have no report from them, but we do have a report from the superintendent. Lee?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a few brief comments this evening. Following on the heels of the presentation, I think it's important to note, and I think it's important to understand, that it's my understanding and belief that our teachers work very, very hard. What we are trying to do is give them the tools they need to be more successful. When you look at the success of iReady, when you look at the ability of Linkit to move student achievement forward, when you look at the new reading program, Fontes and Pinnell, those programs are being implemented in order to give our teachers the tools they need and the data they need to be successful. It's not to burden them. In fact, we think the three programs I mentioned will actually reduce their burden and provide them with the information they need to make informed instructional decisions and move the students in the districts forward. So again, our goal is to increase student achievement. And I know Dr. Charney, as the data guru, is not all that interested in A's, but I know everyone else is. And I know that our students will strive for A's. And with the support we're giving them, hopefully more and more students will get to that level and be highly successful. It's about 5-6 weeks before we reopen school. The CDC came out with new guidelines where they, I haven't seen them in writing yet, the official copy, where they're apparently recommending that students and I guess staff wear masks in school. As we did in June, we looked at the conditions within Homedale. We looked at the quality of the HVAC, heat, ventilation, air conditioning we have in our schools. We looked at the quality of our schools, and we made a decision to go without masks, make it optional. I fully anticipate at this point in time that we will continue that model when we reopen schools in September, because the state reopening plan does provide for a local district to look at the conditions within its district. And if they believe, if the district believes that they're providing a safe and open environment, they can waive some of the recommendations or ignore some of the recommendations that are provided by the state of New Jersey and the CDC. So at this point, without having read the official recommendations, but obviously we'll be reading that very shortly, it is still my recommendation that the district will open in September with masks being optional. And that's, again, due to the quality of our school district. I've been in this business a long time, and I can tell you without exception, these are the finest schools I've ever been in. They're well-designed, even though some of them are a little dated. We have adequate space. We have excellent heat, ventilation, and air conditioning. We have great windows, and all these things contribute to nice, clean air within our district, within our classrooms. And as you know, last fall, summer and fall, the district spent a significant amount of money to even enhance our buildings. These bipolar deionization devices are on the air conditioning units that service a room like this. We have the appropriate filters. Last late summer, we had a tour with our Teachers Association and NJE representatives, and they were very impressed with what the district has done to provide everybody, staff and students, with a healthy environment. So I anticipate continuing that model. Again, things may change, and there may be different factors that impact us. But right now, my position is we're open normally full day in-person instruction with masks being optional. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee. Does anyone have any questions of Lee? So coming up next is the harassment, intimidation, and bullying report. Do you have one for us tonight, Lee?
I apologize. We'll start putting it together. But as we, the board knows, this past year, for obvious reasons, a lot of our students being virtual, we had very few HIBs, but I haven't quite generated all the numbers for that, but I will have the board, have that for the board at the next meeting.
All right, thank you very much, Lee. So now we'll move on to committee reports. Let's start, you know, Joe, you're out there in Zoom land. Do you mind starting off with your report from the Community Relations Committee?
We don't have a report for this week.
All right. I'm sorry to put you on the spot like that.
No problem.
Moving along the table, Terrence, do you wish to give the Personnel and Negotiations Committee report?
Certainly, Board Vice President. Thank you. And just want to make a comment, fully support the superintendent's reference to the bipolar ionization, the UVC, the fact that the buildings in these schools are the air is cleaner than, frankly, most homes, and the way it's treated with light and filtration, and all of the different heavy, heavy taxpayer-funded investments to make Hondo School District one of the primary public schools that open in the middle of December full-time and continuing into September. Absolutely support nothing other than folks that want to wear masks should feel free to do so. Folks that do not should feel free to continue not doing so.
Thank you, Terrence.
The labor negotiation personnel agenda is fairly straightforward, as evidenced in some of the items that you see in the agenda. We met recently with myself and Board Member Urbanski. Some of the members had some scheduling conflicts, and we were with the folks' administrative staff to go over various items. Dr. Seitz, Carolyn Morano, our board attorney, Paul Green. We reviewed a number of different agenda items that I referenced earlier that are on the personnel agenda, different hiring and folks that are moving on with their life journey, different vacancies and certs status regarding Indian Hill principal, high school assistant principals, looked at director of special services, different types of candidates, different types of interview process that they were in. Obviously, I don't go into the detail because those items are a confidential executive session, of course, personnel. We discussed equity affirmative action items, discussed district communications needs, the wrestling coach position, other reviews, special education consultants. There's a report being finalized, executive summary being drafted. Went into the negotiations topic, updating on HTAEA. We'll be kicking off some discussions in the very near future. HTAA, I believe we have our next meeting is August 12th, I believe, Mr. Green? Yeah. And also regarding and thank Dr. Seitz for his year of wonderful service thus far. We are kicking off the Board of Education. We'll be kicking off a superintendent search, and we'll have more detail as board leadership discusses the process, and we meet and talk and retreat and otherwise discuss moving on a moving forward basis, moving from the wonderful interim folks that we've had serving us to permanent full-time status in each of the major positions that has been in an interim status for some time. So that is underway. I want to report that out as well. And I want to thank all the folks that have kicked in and helped the district on an interim basis. We did discuss non-affiliated personal salary recommendations as well, looked at some surveys in the area of Monmouth County, and a general labor update, a legal update, which would of course be an executive session. And are there any questions I can assist with?
Is there any questions from other members of the board for Terrence? Thanks, Terrence, appreciate it for a thorough report.
Pleasure.
Always a thorough report from curriculum instruction with all this stuff on it. Elizabeth, go at it.
You'll be happy to know it's only 2 pages today.
So
you can, brace yourself. The committee met in person and remotely on Wednesday, July 21st at 9 a.m. for its curriculum and instruction special services committee meeting. Recommendations for approval. The committee discussed items recommended by the interim superintendent for approval, including but not limited to out-of-district travel, new courses, which are adaptive dance and novice Spanish, new trade books and textbooks, title fund motions, a donation by the SATS PSG of 4 Adirondack chairs for $675 and $3,000 towards to the class of 2024 senior activities, field experience, student teacher observation, and summer hours. Special services. Dr. Stromsland presented special services recommendations for approval, including but not limited to Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired Services, Student Placement, REACH Program, STARS Program, Extended School Year Tuition Contracts for the Board of Education of Middletown and Edison,
2021-2022 school year tuition contracts for the Board of Educations of Middletown, Edison, Matawan, and South Amboy. Submissions of Individuals with Disability Education Act, which is an IDEA grant, award basic and preschool for 2021-22, allocations of the 2021-22 IDEA preschool fund, acceptance of 2020-2021 extraordinary aid, which is a substantial increase from last year. Summer step up. Dr. Charney presented an update on the summer step up program. The first of two sessions is currently underway. 82% of the children who accepted the program are attending, which is close to 300 students. The program has a mix of remote and in-person classes. Dr. Charney presented an example of a lesson plan that was being used during the program. AP chart. Dr. Charney presented the results of a study that examines the link between the students taking AP test to college graduation rates. There is a positive correlation between taking the actual exam and graduating from college among a number of demographic groups. A link to the results can be found on the notes, which will be posted online. Removing zero as the lowest grade. Dr. Charney presented a proposal to change the lowest grade from a zero to a 50. He presented an article as evidence that issuing zeros undermines student achievement and presents a roadblock in which the students can't rectify their grades. Even if a zero is put into the power school, the grade will automatically revert to a 50 at the end of the semester. Many districts already have this policy. A link to the article can be found on the notes when it's posted online. Course name changes in the high school. Latin level 4 will be changed to Honors Latin 4, and Latin level 5 will be changed to Advanced Placement Latin. The program of studies will reflect these changes. Link it report. Parents with great children in grades 7 through 12 have received a report of their child's most recent Link it assessment. Starting in the 2021-2022 school year, these benchmarks will be sent to parents three times a year so parents can have a more comprehensive view of their students' growth. An example of the report was shown to the committee. We discussed the data presentation that was already given. New teacher orientation. New teacher orientation will take place on August 27th, 30th, and 31st. New hires will learn about important features in the district as well as evaluation systems and curriculum. There are approximately 45 new teachers, aides, and monitors. Teacher PD days. Teacher professional development will be on September 1st and 2nd. An additional day has been allotted on the calendar so staff can prepare for the new curriculum and procedures for the 2021-2022 school year. Dr. Charney presented a detailed working agenda for these 2 days. Harvard training. This summer, select supervisors and principals attended intensive week-long remote leadership training at the Harvard School of Education. Teacher evaluations. Dr. Charney presented a district evaluation as an example of how this should be done in the Homedale School District. Dr. Charney highlighted areas including the components of questioning and discussion, engagement and communication as examples. Evaluations are created under the Danielson framework, which has 22 criteria and 4 domains of instruction. Genesis will be employed in conjunction with Danielson to organize the data. According to Danielson, 11% of teachers in the district should be rated as highly effective. Items for the good of order. The committee meeting dates for the remainder of the year were released to members. The next meeting date is August 18th at 9 a.m.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Do we have any questions for Elizabeth and the curriculum instruction? Elizabeth, actually, I have one quick question for you. It wasn't that long ago, actually, I guess it was about 5 years ago. I think Joe might be the only one who remembers this, that the task of doing these appraisals was so onerous or, you know, just so time consuming that we even considered hiring a part-time assistant superintendent whose responsibility would be solely to go around and do that. And it sounds to me from what you were saying from the report, we've kind of gotten that a little under control, that it's there were able to really you know, give our teachers the fair shake and let everyone get the appraisals that they need. Is that basically the assessment from your report?
Yes.
Okay. Cool. That's great. I mean, it's great improvement.
If you want more detail, you could ask Dr. Chair.
Yeah, I was going to. Is that assessment a correct one, Jeff or Lee? That we've made some really great progress of being able to get through what is a really difficult and challenging test. You're near the microphone, Lee. So
let me just comment. We certainly have made great progress. Danielson is an excellent model and was selected by a group of teachers and administrators a number of years ago. And Homedale, like every district, experienced a real challenge using this new observation evaluation model, regardless of the model you chose. It just was a result of NJ Achieve and NJ, forget the second one, NJ Achieve and another bill. But I think what was said, I think it's important to mention, is that we have all this, and I'll call it data, but under our current system of using Google Docs, we don't have the ability to really search it the way we want to. So that is why we are moving to Genesis, so that we can actually do a search and determine when certain standards are being taught and how frequently they're being taught. And that will help us, again, refine the instructional program. Again, we're not changing Danielson. That was selected by the district. It's a strong program. It's widely recognized both nationally and internationally. So we're keeping that. All we're doing is changing the software program that we use to manage it. And that would be significant for us. Jeff, any other comments?
Just that we, to Mike's question, we did complete cycle one through cycle three.
Just to address Mike's comment or question, we did complete cycle one through cycle three observations of all our staff. It is onerous, but we the department of curriculum instruction, we keep a spreadsheet, supervisors and principals account for the spreadsheet, and they put in their observations. So that we were able to do that. And as Lee had stated, now it's a question of how we use the data.
Thanks, Jeff. I think I let the power speech slip away from me a little bit. I should have said onerous, not odious, but maybe for some teachers, it is an odious process. Eileen, do you have a report for the board?
Sure. Budget and Finance met on July 21st at 5:30. On the agenda tonight are items 70 through 78, which was discussed in the meeting. The first thing we talked about, again, is the referendum. And at Village and Indian Hill, the contractor continues to address the outstanding punch list items, and they will be completed before September. Same applies for at SATS and the high school as well. Regarding the CCTV and the PA system, the contractor is in the process of preparing the various documents necessary for the closeout, along with the requirements for punch list completion. All work, again, will be completed before school starts in September. Some exciting things going on at Homedale High School and SATS. In the Homedale High School Commons, the floor is being removed and being replaced. Presently, all tile has been taken up and the subflooring is being prepped. And all the tile and grout has been delivered. Also at the high school commons, the bathrooms are being demoed and rough plumbing has been installed, and similarly new tile has been delivered as well. Over at SATS, we are going to do some work in the cafeteria. The ceiling materials have been demoed and the ceiling area was painted, and electrical work for lighting has begun. At the SATS Innovation Lab, the ceiling will be painted as well as the walls. We'll renovate lighting in two small rooms, install new flooring throughout, install new sinks and cabinets, and install new power reels. Demo work at this point is complete and the painting has begun. At Indian Hill, we are modifying the existing automated WebLogic building automation system to include a uniform interface for operators, replace existing controllers, temperature sensors, and install new communication cabling. Scope assessment has been completed. Cable work is scheduled to begin the first week of August. The committee talked about scheduling a complex walkthrough for the public. Right now, that walkthrough is tentatively scheduled for September 1st at 5 p.m. Paul Green, the board attorney, provided an update regarding the status of the agreements for the SROs and the class three officers, and it will be included on the agenda for this evening. Regarding transportation bids for the 2021-2022 school year, the district is in the process of finalizing the remaining transportation routes and the applicable resolutions for bids 22-01 and bid 22-02, and will be included on tonight's agenda for approval. Regarding the 2020-2021 extraordinary aid and non-public school transportation aid, the state notified the district of their extraordinary aid and non-public school transportation cost reimbursement amounts, and the applicable resolutions will also be on tonight's agenda for approval. 2021 and 2022 grant awards, elementary and secondary education, and individuals with disabilities. The committee reviewed the ESEA and the IDEA Part B grant awards, and they will be included on tonight's agenda for approval. And the last item was the non-public school aid. This represents state aid provided to the non-public schools located within the district, within the township. The district acts as a flow-through entity, whereas the state distributes the aid to the district, and the district distributes the funding to the applicable non-public schools located in Holmdel. The aid is for security, nursing, technology, and textbooks. And that resolution is also on tonight's agenda. Our next committee meeting is scheduled for August 18th at 5 p.m.
Thank you, Eileen. Does anyone have any questions for Eileen? I know that Pete's not here. I was just curious if anyone...
He asked me to...
excellent.
Just in case you were sick of my voice.
No, we would never be that way.
Actually, Eileen said... Well, let me sing. The meeting, the Buildings, Grounds, and Safety Committee met on July 22nd at 5 p.m., and it was remote. Eileen actually hit on every single item we discussed, except for the all-important district cleaning projects. And that was, the committee was provided an overview of the detailed cleaning process that occurs during the summer, along with various projects. And our next meeting is August 19th at 5 o'clock.
Do you have any questions for Elizabeth? Actually, I do have a question for our Building and Grounds Committee, but I'm not going to put the pressure on Elizabeth. I'm going to put the pressure on you, Michael. Are we still scheduled in August, as we traditionally do and have kind of put on hold because of the pandemic, the setting of the rates for rentals of our facilities?
Yeah, that'll be discussed at our committee meetings, and the board will be updated quarterly.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you very much. All right.
I have a brief comment.
Oh, yeah, Terrence, sure.
I'll be very brief. It's on Buildings and Grounds. From time to time, from the township level and also school level, sports and recreation have been discussed as to where fields and things, items like that would be located, whether they be turf, whether they be natural, whether, you know, would it be on school property, would it be on town property. And I just want to throw out a concept. I know there are different locations that were thought about, and there could be a separate discussion, not at this time, about needs and those dynamics which sports are in need. And I know one of the board members here is very well involved right across the lane there. But there is there's a concern from folks on turf as far as the environmental conditions and whether or not you're near a C1 waterway, or whether or not you're using materials that are healthy or not healthy, depending on the science and what the data is. So I have two things I want to mention. One is that turf comes in many different varieties, including environmental. I believe they use coconut shell materials or natural rubber materials, not just shredded tires and things of that nature. So I'm just putting that out there. There's a different cost structure to those. But then where do you locate a field if, for example, we had an interlocal with the township and partnered together to do that? A couple of years ago, we had a vote, Mike, you remember, it's unanimous for, during the best practices checklists for the Board of Education and the Township Committee, to notice a joint meeting where they can meet on a host of different issues that may be of mutual concern, whether they're issues that are positive or whether the issues have some intellectual friction regardless, but to have that meeting. So I'd suggest that we do that strongly. That goes back a few years. It never happened. It should. But a location that I think may be interesting, and then I'll finish. Behind us at school, there's a underutilized area with equipment that I think can be consolidated, put in a different area. There's a tremendous amount of old equipment that really is due for an auction or scrap or donation as the public contracts law would allow.
You're talking about near the old gas station? I mean, yeah. Gas pumps?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what the sizes are or not, but I know there's some different debates as to locations and things, but I just want to throw out that location as a concept for discussion, whether it's a township or the school or together. It's already has oil on it. It's already pervious. It's already dirty. And that might be an interesting rehabilitation project that could be a joint program or either a school program or a joint program to further the needs of groups like lacrosse. Many coaches are coming up, many parents are coming up to township meetings, not so much here, but if in a needs analysis, we're looking for a location and we were looking to be somewhere other than pristine turf, pristine natural grass, that location, from my perspective and seeing it over the years, very much underutilized. In the event that that area can be a repurposed, is the word I was looking for, as a high-end, environmentally sensitive turf field, I think that reuse would touch a lot of topics and potentially help the folks that are in legitimate need for sports fields on a field that you control, meaning it's not Green Acres, and so there's not the statewide access issue. So I just want to put that on the record. I don't know, Brian, if you want to, if you had a few thoughts, because that's your wheelhouse.
Thank you, Terrence. I totally agree, and it'd be nice if we can get moving forward on that as well as some other topics with the town that we've been discussing in all our committee meetings. So hopefully you'll hear some of this and react accordingly, and we can move forward together. It's all about the town, the kids, and all of us here.
Well, I think this is very creative thoughts. One thing I would just add as this item would probably go to the Building and Grounds Committee is what I've been hearing, and maybe I'm not getting the right volume, but it does seem to come up time and time again, is that one of our weaknesses is not having enough practice fields. That, you know, we've got a lot of teams now and they're all fighting for space, and it isn't so much our focus in the past has really been the performance, you know, the day of event, but these kids need someplace to practice as well. So one of the things I think, and this is a very interesting idea that Terrence brings up, but what I would like us to also look at from the, you know, the Building and Grounds Committee level is what is the state of our practice fields? Are we kind of at a situation where we're scrambling? If we're overbooking fields for other outside groups and that's getting in the way of practice time, then, you know, this is a discussion that we really should have with the administration and make sure that that's addressed. Eileen, did you want to say something?
Well, I think that our school sports is getting priority as far as the field is concerned. I think that's what has been accomplished thus far, right? And then second to that becomes the outside user group. So I do think our sports teams are getting access first. And then from there, I think it goes out to the user group. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Did you have something else you wanted to say?
I also, you want him to go?
Go ahead.
I also have from my own opinion. I think this is a school's properties, a school's fields, this school's budget. I think our school, our students in the school has the priorities to use those fields. I think that for communities, sports, which should be this budget, this expense should come from our township or communities. So I think that's a good way to think to make it clear.
I think that's very fair. And I would add, following on that, another location, which is very simple, which is absolute visual disgrace at the moment, and it's been that way for many years, is the swim club. The swim club is beautiful. The underutilized area that lays dormant and just visually awful and a testament to not working properly together, and which is easily fixable, by the way. It's almost not a criticism. It's really an opportunity. It's a perfect location owned by, you know, one of the sides of the, you know, both sides of the coin, I guess, of the district and the town. So it also speaks to a perfect location for lights, a perfect location for environmentally sensitive turf. And there's a fellow from Shaw, there's a premium for the environmentally sensitive turf, but it does exist. And so I think that addresses one of the key objections to that topic. But I was down in Toms River a couple of years ago, and the girls were playing lacrosse. It didn't quite click for me, the dynamic with turf and the need for turf. And it appeared to be somebody else's argument, to be honest with you. So I'm down in there and I start getting messages from Homedale Sports. This field shut down, that field shut down, all these fields are shut down. Homedale is shut down. And the irony of it, I'm in Toms River, you know, Mr. Petruzzo's stomping grounds. The girls, young girl, they were 9 at the time, I think, they're on the lacrosse fields, it's pouring rain, and they're having an absolute thrilling time playing with all of these other kids, only because it's turf. That was my moment when I realized this really truly matters, you know, so internalizing it. Homedale was shut down, nobody was playing. They were all home on games, scrolling through whatever miserable social media platform is giving the dopamine effect to kids today, right? And that's where they were. And two young girls, along with a bunch of other ones, were having an absolute blast, you know, in the rain on a turf field playing lacrosse. And so I think that if we just get the adults in the room and have a normal, rational conversation, and it's okay, people argue, that's a human condition. You can probably find some nice conclusions, but to your point, the town swim club location is also a great location that's underutilized.
These are all good comments, I think, for further discussion. Just to clarify, though, I did want to make this clear. I think we have a good balance right now as we're working with recreation and providing the fields with our students first in mind and then allowing those outside the community. I just was raising the question of whether or not as we look at expansion of our fields or looking at other opportunities such as the one that Terrence brought up, I just wanted to bring up the question of whether or not we have enough fields for practice. You know, and a practice field is not, you know, a playing field per se, but it's an all-purpose field for lots of sports.
So just to talk a little bit more about that, I mean, part of the problem is we have so many user groups wanting to use our field because the township, unfortunately, does not have those capabilities. Mm. So, I mean, as a school district, we want to always support our students, whether they're in class time and school sports or even after school is done. So, unfortunately, due to limitations that the township has provided, they end up knocking on our door looking for our fields to play. So the nice thing is we always give first dibs to our sports, which is awesome, and they'll always take priority. That'll never change. But with the limited space and the limited recreation facilities we have here in Homedale, we have nothing else to do but offer it out to or have them come to us and request fields because yeah. The students of this town, the athletes of this town don't really have any other place to go, unfortunately. Township has not provided that. So
very good point. Before we move to the next item on the agenda, just a note for you, Board Secretary, Joe Hammer's having some technical problems. So he's dropping off our call. So you could put that down. I believe we still have a quorum though. I think we have 6, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll now move to the item, questions or comments from the public on action items only. Are there anyone here in the room who have, yes, we have Denise. Please give me your name, full name and your address.
Hi everyone, Denise King. I'm here representing the HTEA. My address is 38 Woodview Drive in Howell, New Jersey. I did reach out to Dr. Seitz this afternoon. However, being that we haven't had any resolution on this item, I wanted to bring it forth. Number one, this one was the curriculum, which you know that we already brought forth is action item number 8, that the rate is incorrect. We filed an unfair labor charge based on that one. So hopefully we can resolve that. That was based on the negotiations that occurred last year. And the rate of pay for, which is item number 66, for all of the step up and extended programs where they're working one-on-one with students who are struggling. The teachers are doing that. They were approved, I believe, in the May meeting at a higher rate than you're proposing at this particular meeting. That being said, we have had a grievance in the past on this issue. The grievance was settled by an arbitrator. I have the documentation of that grievance that I can share with you, stating the rate of pay for summer for pupil contact time. So I'm asking you to table it right now and wait to change that rate until you have an opportunity to review the grievance and be able to see what the arbitrator awarded.
Thank you, Denise. Lee, did you want to make this a retroactive item? That is, if it was tabled, it would be retroactively reflecting any mediator decisions or anything of that nature? Are you comfortable with us voting on it tonight?
I can refer this to Mr. Greenman. I don't see any reason to pull these two items.
Yes, I mean, this can be adjusted later if there's any particular issue to be disputed. I mean, that can be resolved through the grievance procedure or at least addressed that way.
All right.
So, meanwhile, I just want to state one thing.
Should be appointed and paid.
They were appointed already. This is the problem with this. My members contacted me via text, via email, via phone calls today regarding this. They were told that they were going to be paid by the rate that is negotiated in our contract. They agreed to take employment based on that rate. Now you're telling them after they worked for 3 weeks already that you no longer are going to pay them the rate that they already agreed to. And that is not fair.
I apologize. What number on the
66. So that is my biggest concern by you doing this, is that you already took an action. You voted on it. They took an appointment based on that. I mean, anybody in this room who goes for a job asks how much they're getting paid. When they're told how much they're getting paid, they either accept the employment or they deny it, right, based on what their needs are. They already accepted that. And that's what concerns me with this. This is another situation that's already in the contract. For as long as I've been here, the rate has been what it's been until that particular grievance, which changed it. And that's what the extended school year people are paid because of it. The extended school year is the same sort of situation as we're doing right now. We're working with children to make sure that they succeed and they have growth. So I don't understand why all of a sudden we're changing terms and conditions.
Well, we're not changing terms and conditions, Mrs. King. We are having a dispute over which particular portion of that contract language applies. And that's something that the board certainly can take a look at. Our recommendation is to go ahead and approve it tonight, so at least the payment gets made at the rate that we think is the appropriate rate. And then if there's a dispute, we can look at that through the grievance process.
I just have a brief question. Do your members have any issue if the board chose to table the matter for a proper executive session so they were, you know, raised appropriately and that type of thing? Or are you seeking some particular action this evening?
Well, because there was an action. You already approved a certain rate of pay. So you're asking for tonight, I was asking you to table it so that you can at least look at it and make a decision for our next board meeting, which is when? Or in August. You have two usually in August, right?
What turnaround time are you seeking is what I was trying to just understand the flow of our meetings.
Well, when do you usually pay them on this, Michael? You would know the answer to that. Do you usually pay them at the end of the summer or you pay them at the end of the month?
Yeah, it would be paid in August 15th.
Right. So when is the next board meeting?
The next board meeting would be after August 15th. So we really, I think, Denise, we're in a position where we really need to make this decision, you know, to vote on it. So there's something coming on the 15th of one level or another. We can take the time period that's necessary to determine, you know, what the correct rate is, and we can make a very quick decision roughly 2 weeks later when we next meet as a board.
Yeah, I just have concerns about this. This is a long-standing practice. This is not something that's new. We didn't negotiate it last time, like the curriculum situation. This has been, like I said, for the at least 20 years that I know of, until that one grievance, which was more than 10 years ago, because I was the president or the grievance chair at the time, which was a long time ago.
I think, Denise, if this the way the situation is right now, and I understand your concerns, but it as a board, we really need to rely on the judgment of our superintendent and our legal attorney in regards to what is owed to you, and that we should pass that, but it doesn't shut you down from seeking a higher amount, which we as a board could consider probably as soon as 2 weeks after the payments are made on the 15th, if the mediation process moves in that manner.
Well, so, what I would like to see happen is if you pay the members what you owe them for now, and if you're going to, I mean, I'm going to have to bring it forth to you, but as you know, grievance procedures can take months. And a lot of these people took this job. So I would like to expedite that and for it, since it's at the board level, that we can meet immediately regarding it.
We can certainly work to expedite this for the August meeting.
Okay, that's my concern. I don't want it to see dragging on where people are anticipating funds in order to, you know, pay for things.
Well, also need a commitment to try to get this resolved by that time. And
thank you.
We certainly want to make sure that we're paying our teachers what they deserve and what they've been promised. And we'll try to get this resolved for you.
Thank you.
You bet. Do we have any other questions from the audience? Is there anyone behind me on Zoom? Seeing none, we will then move to the main portion of our agenda. I would like to move items 1 through 79. I would like to point out that items 1 through 79 do not include the ship's slip sheet items that we had discussed in executive session. So I'm moving items 1 through 79. Do I have a motion?
Move.
Second.
Oh.
Any discussion?
Board Vice President, there are a number of items that I'll be voting no on, but I was conferring with and emailing Superintendent as well as Mr. Petrizzo and Mr. Green. I can identify them by list. What do you prefer?
Well, I think the items that were of concern to you are on the slip sheet, which is not part of.
No,
we had some other ones.
There are items regarding salaries that were inconsistent with the unanimous consensus of a labor subcommittee.
Well, why don't we do this, Terrence? Let's pull that item from this vote, and then we'll go back. Is it how many items?
When you and I talked about that, you said you didn't want to pull anything.
No. I meant
vote no on those particular items.
No, I meant he wants to discuss them, though.
Well, I can list them with explanation, your brief.
He can still discuss.
And so Mr.
Yeah.
Petrizzo.
So go ahead. Yeah, Tanchev, you can go ahead.
Okay.
We did get a second.
We could do it. And then you just note if Mr. Petrizzo can just make the notes. Okay.
Sure. Just discuss them.
Okay, great. Thanks. I'll try to be brief. The this matter relates to the non-affiliated folks that are not subject to a collective bargaining arrangement. Various contracts. Many months ago, during a labor subcommittee that I chair, we discussed staff looking at the market. It was originally market and merit in regard to salaries, what the ranges are in Monmouth County, the area for title, years of service, things of that nature. That never happened. So we then had a recommendation that was based on flat percentages that did not address the market issue or the merit issue. But in fairness, they do fall along what many districts do, just blanket percentages. So it has an impact on keeping the low salaries low, and it keeps on tracking the higher salaries higher and compounding each other. But the idea is to switch that up and get to a more market-based oriented system for the non-affiliated. Obviously, collective bargaining is a totally different situation. So then we did have a subcommittee meeting where the folks that were on the committee had unanimous consensus on a range, which I was involved in drafting the range originally, but ultimately it's superintendent's recommendation, that ranged from a low of 1% to as high as 8%, that dealt with, from my own perspective, I'm speaking for myself, it dealt with market issues, market conditions, looking at length of service and things like that are done in most other businesses, as well as several items that I thought addressed, to some extent, gender equity. For salaries for folks that their positions are on the lower end of pay. That brings me to where I want to identify the items that I'm supporting and items that I'm not, at least so the record's clear. But I want to make sure that folks had a background. It was based on market and it's based on the unanimous subcommittee recommendation, which ultimately was disregarded.
Thank you, Terrence.
Okay.
Do I have any other discussion on items 1 through 69? Hearing none. Roll call. I'm sorry, 79. My apologies. Roll call, please.
Mr. Sokol.
Yes.
Mrs. Baynoth.
Yes.
Roll.
On item bear with me a moment. On item 31, no, based on market. On item number 32, no, based on market. Item 33, no, based on market. Item 34, yes. Item 35, I'm sorry, agenda item 35. Yes. Item 36, yes. Item 37, the yes on DeSara, although the recommendation was higher. Dean, yes, although the recommendation was higher. John, yes, and Zakharovich, no. On item 38, that was based on market and also comparison of employees. Item 38 is yes. Item 39, no, based on market. Item 40, yes, recommendation was higher. Item 41, no on market. Item 42, no on market. Item 43, yes. Item 44, we're almost done. Yes. Item 45, yes. Item 46, yes. Item 47, yes on all. DeSaro, Dean, the recommendation was higher, and no on Zakharovich. And I believe that comprises all of them. And item 48, yes, thank you.
Thank you, Terrence. Can we continue the roll call?
Mr. Foster.
Yes.
Mrs. Urbanski.
Yes. Yes.
Mrs. Zhang.
Yes.
Motion passes.
I would now like to ask for a motion by the board to go into closed session to discuss.
Public comment.
All business?
No, we have to go public comment. We're going to come back after we would discuss it.
Okay.
I guess I have been overruled by people stronger and more knowledgeable than me. Let's go then to old business, right? Business? Any new business?
I have one item.
Old business, new business?
It'd be new business, but because we just approved it. And I think it's just a clarification from Mr. Petruzzo. I was looking at the bids on the buses, and I'm sure there's a reason, but I just want to ask it. A number of the bids are, they're bid by one company and not bid by the other. And then it swaps. I've had issues in the past in public sector where I'll get one bid on an ambulance and I know there are five companies that do it, right? So I'm just trying to understand the reason why vendors like Lori on route description, one of the route descriptions, no bid from Lori and Keyport bids on it. Other ones, Lori bids on it and Keyport doesn't bid on it. It just strikes me as there's a competitive issue there. And I won't go beyond my thoughts on that, but I want to understand why there's a no bid. Why is there no bid?
Yeah, I can't give you that answer. It's an open public bid that was advertised to all, in accordance with the process and laws to do so. I can't speak to why a contractor chose to bid on a certain route and not. But I can tell you that we're compliant with the laws.
Okay. I just want to put my concerns on record. It's highly unusual that a company that's in the same business chooses to bid on certain jobs and doesn't bid on the other jobs when one of their peers is bidding on the job and they're not bidding on the comparison job as far from trying to receive the lowest possible responsible bid. Thank you.
All right. Since we have no old business or new business, we'll open up to questions or comments from the public about anything they'd like to talk about. Does anyone in the room wish to make a comment? We don't seem to have anyone on Zoom. So we will now, you have a question, Joe. Go ahead, please. Make sure you have your full name and address.
Hi, I'm Jill Perez from 6 Sweet Briar Lane. So Dr. Saitje had spoke about allowing for choice when it comes to masks. in the fall. And that is something that's been weighing on my mind because my children did not go to school last year in the public schools. And I have spent 20 years in public education. Last year, I was supervising student teachers. And so I was able to go into some school buildings. And one of the things that I did notice with the masks is that when kids would sneeze or if they coughed, the mask came down. So it's very interesting to see, you know, this kind of false protection that it did offer. And then the other thing that I would hear reoccurring with student teachers or even their cooperating teacher, especially in the months as people were getting used to working in the masks, were all the headaches that they were getting. And that comes from a lack of oxygen, you know, to the body. Your body needs this oxygen. It, you know, I don't know how kids can think all day long, you know, without having the ability to breathe. And you can probably hear it in my voice because, you know, we have about a month or so before school starts. And I'm concerned, you know, living in the state, what it's going to look like, what it's going to look like for our kids. Because, you know, when I got into education, it was about making sure that we would never compromise the well-being of our children. And I really think that if we continue to mask them, we're definitely going to be judged. You know, we're going to look back at this and say, what did we do to these kids? How could they function all day? How could they get in trouble for learning it? You know, they're just little people trying to figure things out. So I think that this is something that really needs a lot of attention. I think there's so much data out there that shows that these masks didn't work. But the reality is, I believe in choice. So I do believe that this is a parental issue. And I believe that if a parent wants to put their child in a mask, they can. And if they don't want to, they don't have to. Like, you know, clearly my stance is I don't want to. But this is America. And I absolutely value the choice, right? And I don't believe that our government should ever tell us how to live our life. And so if we allow the government to come in and take away these parental rights, it's really just going to hurt us in the long run on so many levels, right? And states are coming out saying, you know, we're going to leave it up to parents. Most of them are southern states. But I think, you know, we also need to lead in this area and honor people and not look at this politically, red or blue or whatnot. This is really holding on to parents' rights and what's most important for our children. And if their teachers want to wear a mask, they can. If the students want to wear a mask, they can. But I don't think that this should be an issue that is forced. And I just need to state that because, you know, if come September there's masks, then I am going to be very sad because my kids will miss out on another year of public school. So I wanted to share that. Thank you.
Thank you, Jill. I see that we do have Kimberly looking to speak from Zoom. Kimberly, please give us your full name and your address.
Good evening, Kimberly Tosillo, 21 Huntley Road. I just have a quick question. I had emailed Mr. Scalacci and received something back saying it was undeliverable. I then took that, screenshot that, and sent an email to the head of the tech department and to Mr. Seitz, and that was 10 days ago on July 19th. I'm yet to receive a response as to what the technical issue was. Is his email disabled? And who we should be emailing in regards to Indian Hill at this point? Because I also see that there's a posting for that position that starts sooner than January 1st, which is what we have as a retirement. As a resignation would be starting January 1st. So I'm just trying to get an answer on what is happening with Brian Scalacci since his email has been, it seems to me, disabled.
I'm going to ask the superintendent to give a clarification, Kimberly.
Thank you.
Yes, I don't remember receiving that email, and I know you referred it to the tech department. As to who you mail it to, it depends on, and I don't want to get into this in public, what the message is. If it's a question about one of our schools, it should go to the principal. So it really depends on what your question is.
It was about my daughter, who's an Indian Hill student. So I sent it to the principal of Indian Hill, which is to public knowledge, as far as I'm concerned, is Mr. Scalacci. And it seems to be an issue happening with, you know, with the email. But is it a technical issue, or has his email disabled and he's no longer in the district?
Can we comment?
Wait. Paul, can you comment?
Well, look, we're not.
When you say carefully, I.
Well, because it's the superintendent is certainly aware of the limitations of commenting on personnel in public, and he can certainly address the question of who the appropriate person to respond would be.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, I would say that to the vice principal at Indian Hill, who is there at the moment as the acting principal through the summer months.
Until someone is hired. Okay, so as of now, it's not Mr. Scalacci, which is why the email is not working. Thank you.
Yep.
While we do not appear to have any other individuals who have comments or questions for the public, so at this time, I'd like to make a motion for the board to go back into executive session for personnel matters to discuss items on a slip sheet that we do intend to come back into session and vote on. Do I have a motion to do so?
Move. Second.
Could we have a roll call on that? A vote. Oh, what? Voice vote, please. All in favor? All right. As I mentioned, this is an item that we do plan to take action on. So we will come back if you'd like to hang around. But until then, this meeting is currently
recessed.
Meeting back into session. Oh, is Mr. Petrizzo not here yet? Michael, we're going to bring this back into session. I think it makes sense for us to do a roll call since we've had a few changes in who's in attendance, and we need to make sure that we demonstrate that we have a quorum. So when you're ready, Michael.
Mr. Sockel?
Yes.
I'll just go back. Ms. Flynn is absent. Mr. Sockel is here. Mr. Reddy is absent. Mrs. Bramante?
Here.
Yes.
Sorry.
Mr. Wall is absent. Mr. Foster?
Yes, here.
Mr. Hammer?
Here.
Mrs. Urbanski?
Here and yes.
Zhang.
What's this for?
Just a roll call.
Yes, I'm here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Michael. One quick question for my friend, Paul. So we're about to consider items that fall under the category of slip sheet. I'm going to read the headings of the six items, and then we will bring them up to a vote. Item 80, approval of appointment K through 6 supervisor district, has been pulled from the agenda. 81 is approval of the appointment of assistant principal to Homedale High School. 82 is approval of appointment for a mathematics teacher for grade 6 in the Indian Hill. 83 is approval of appointment mathematics teacher grade 6 Indian Hill School. Item 84 is approval of appointment special education teacher Homedale High School. Item 85 is approval of appointment half-time for an elementary teacher at the Village School. And item six is approval of appointment, special education teacher for the SOAR program. I'm going to move that we vote on items 81 through 86. Do I have a motion?
Motion.
Do I have a second?
Yes. Yes. Second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Do we have any discussion on items 81 through 86?
I want to discuss item 81, approval of appointment assistant principal, Homedale High School. I think for this very important position, I should be on the public agenda of this BOE meetings. So Homedale parents and residents, they can, if they know this on the agenda, so they probably, ahead, they can dial in the meeting. If they have any questions, they can ask questions. So I think the process is we didn't put in on a public agenda, and we just rushed in the last minutes. So I didn't have the enough time and enough information to process this item. That's my point.
Do we have any other comments involving items 81 through 86? Hearing no discussion, I will put this up for a roll call.
Mr. Sokol?
Yes.
Mrs. Belmonte?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Hammer?
Yes.
Mrs. Urbanski?
Yes.
Mrs. Ng?
For the item 81, I see abstain. The reason I abstain is I don't really think the process is transparent enough.
Zeng, there's no discussion on the vote itself. Oh, you've already explained why you're.
All right, thank you. The rest of the items, I say yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you, Michael. We have now come to that moment in the meeting in which we are ready to adjourn. Can I have a show of hands? Well, these proceedings are officially closed. Good night, everyone.